There's a good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he must be! And it is! Peter Will!
Welcome, everyone, to From Witten to Rotterdam, an Aston Villa podcast. We're your hosts. My name is Eddie.
Hi, and I'm James.
And with us today is Chris Fetters, founder of the Seattle Lions Club. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Eddie. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, James, for having me on. I got your stuff on Twitter, and I'm thrilled to be here and excited to tell my story, I guess.
Absolutely. Just so folks know, our resident realist Pascal is not with us today. He had a few work commitments he could not avoid, but he is sending his best from Dubai as well. But anyway, Chris, I think this is a perfect time to just jump right into our global villain section. So, coming out of Seattle, which I think a lot of Americans as well would definitely argue is sort of the epicenter of the American soccer culture, the football culture here. Tell us a little bit about, just how you found the Villa, especially as it sounds like you're a Washington native, having been, a UW reporter, and now, you went to Whitman. So maybe tell us a little bit about just how you found Aston Villa, of all the things.
Yeah, it's I'll try to make it as short as possible. It is interesting because you talk about Seattle being Soccer City. I think there's probably some Portland Villa fans that would probably take exception to that. But then, of course, for at least people in the States understand that the soccer rivalry between Seattle and Portland is pretty strong. But I grew up playing a lot of soccer. I probably played it from when I was 5-6 years old until I was almost in high school. And so that would have been probably mid to late 70s. And when I was growing up, the only soccer that you could really watch other than, I was watching Seattle Sounders because they were founded in 1974. But other than that, the only real soccer that you could watch on TV, especially if you were curious about European soccer, for instance, was a PBS show on Saturdays and Sundays by Toby Charles that did Bundesliga highlights. So that was it. So I was a 10-year-old, but I could pronounce Borussia Mönchengladbach. Mm-hmm. And that was, which was so bizarre. And I got kind of clued into that. And then when I got into high school, I started playing more golf with my parents because that was something that my dad was really into. And so that really took my attention. And I played golf competitively in high school and college. But what happened was, I think probably around 2007, 2008, right around the time that Martin O'Neill took over and Randy Lerner took over. Ironically enough, I didn't really know anything about the Villa at the time or had paid very much attention, but I had a cousin move from Wisconsin to here in the Seattle area, and he is literally a rocket scientist. I mean, he's a propulsion engineer, and one of his real loves is Everton. So right now we're having a hell of a good time. It's fun, with Matt and everything kind of. He kind of got back into it with me because he didn't know too many people back then, just having moved into the area. And he knew of a pub about 10 minutes away from where I live called the Georgian Dragon. And it was a proper English pub. I mean, built by expats in the mid 90s. And they really fashioned it after their old kind of run of the mill pubs that you'd find in any town in England. And so he invited me to come over and watch some games, obviously with Everton first. But he was living on the other side of the town. He was a ways away. And so he couldn't come to all these games. But once I started watching Premier League again, it was like almost reliving childhood memories a little bit. And so I got absolutely plugged in. I mean, I couldn't stop watching it enough. I got absolutely I was glued. I was absolutely transfixed. And so I started watching. And then after about 6 months or so of watching every weekend that I could, going to the pub, meeting people from other teams and whatnot. There was a vague Villa kind of presence there, but it wasn't really outstanding. It was still all Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal. City had not really plugged in very much then, obviously, because That's when the new money hadn't really kicked in. You know, so I was thinking, I got to pick a team. I mean, this is kind of fruitless if I don't have maybe a rooting interest. So I knew I couldn't be an Everton fan because that was Matt's team. There was just no way that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I started following it a bit. And obviously, like I said, this was around the time of Martin O'Neill. And obviously you guys, you know, had Ashley Young and Gabby and all those guys, Milner, Gareth Barry, and obviously Larson, Melbourne, all those guys. And I started just really following them just casually at first. And then I got really excited by their style of play and really just kind of was like, wow, I kind of like the way these guys roll. And this was obviously at the time where they were doing top six finishes. They were playing in the Europa League. So, you know, I remember the times when they had to go to play CKSK Moscow and CSKA or CK? I can't remember. CSKA, but they played Moscow and those kinds of things. And I was thinking, okay, this is really interesting. I got to find out more about these guys. So then I started really doing some research, found out that they were the top team in the second largest city in the country. So that really piqued my interest. Then I found out that they had won Europe, and that sealed it for me. I was like, okay, this is clearly a team with a great pedigree, great tradition. They're playing well. They're considered a top club, at least back then they were, but they weren't a tagger on. You weren't tagging on. Back in the day, obviously you didn't want to be the glory hunter, the quote unquote, you know, the guy that was just going out there and just picking the easy team, which at that time, a lot of people were picking Tottenham, for instance. I remember that. And so I really felt like I was a maverick by picking Villa. I was like, this is awesome. So I'd go in and I went and bought a couple things online at the shop. So I'd have a scarf or I'd have something and I'd roll in. And then, I think around 2012 was the year that they decided to have some friendlies. So they did them in the States. They played in Philadelphia, Chicago, Portland. And so the head of the Chicago Lions at that time was an expat named Simon, still is. Yep. And Simon tried to get a group together to see if we could have kind of a meetup before the game in Chicago. And I was like, well, if this is an opportunity to go check this out, I'm going to go if I can. Because I knew I was already going to go to the one in Portland because it's only 3 hours away by car.
Yeah.
So I got on a plane, went to Chicago, didn't know anybody other than some people that I've met online who kind of encouraged me to go. And that's when I met a few guys from England. Like there were some guys from Kidderminster that I had met that I'm still lifelong friends with now. And just had an amazing time meeting Villa fans from all over the country. And I knew that this was kind of my new family. This was like the way it was going to be. So went home, and the whole time during the talk, everyone was like, you got to start a supporters club in Seattle. You got to do it. And I'm like, yeah, but I feel like such a poser. I've never been over there. I feel like it's got too much American stink on it almost. Like it's going to be in Seattle. So it's going to already have enough stink on it to begin with. I can't change that, but at least I feel like if I've gone over there, I've met the people I need to meet. If I've seen it for myself, I feel like I have some skin in the game. And I don't know if that's just mental thinking or whatever, but I was really hung up on it. I just did not want to start a club until I'd been over there and experienced it. And so at the same time, my parents had actually bought a trip, and it was kind of vaguely, it was a little coincidental because they knew about Matt's interest in Everton, and they had actually purchased something during a silent auction that would allow them to go to a game, a Manchester United game. And so they were asking me and Matt, well, should we go to a United game with Everton, or should we go to one with Villa? And we were like, so Matt and I met up at the Georgia Dragon. We were having some pints, and we were like, they're crazy. If they're going to go to this game, they've got to go to a derby game. They got to go play United. They got to go see United and City. So we told them that. So they set it up, and this was a whole thing where they were going to get a Wayne Rooney signed jersey and do all this thing. It was a really option. Interesting thing. So they asked me if I wanted to tag along, and I was like, heck yeah, I'm gonna. So in 2013 is when it happened in the spring. And it was supposed to happen on a Saturday was when the game was happening. But as you guys know, all these fixtures get congested with cup games, Champions League, whatever. So the Saturday game ended up getting moved to Monday night. Well, what that allowed was that allowed me to go watch my first Villa away game, away day, and it was the game at Stoke with the Matthew Lowton golazo.
Oh wow, I was there as well, Chris. Yeah, that was my first.
Yep, that was my first away day.
Great time.
And so here's how it went, and I don't mean to hog the mic, but this is a cool story. We were staying up in this town called Thirsk, which is north of York, because there was a fishing thing that was connected with AIG, who was the kit sponsor at the time with United. And so they had all this package connected with United. And so I got on the train at Thirsk at like first thing in the morning, rolled into Manchester Piccadilly, dropped off my gear at the hotel there, got back on and met the Kidderminster Lions at the Wolverhampton train station. I walk on the bus and these guys have like Jaeger bombs in hand. Like, dude, you're way behind. So I'm like, okay, here we go. This is the way you guys roll. I can roll. So we roll. And then they had the piss up at the Staffordshire or the Stafford Gun Club thing or wherever. It was out in the middle of nowhere, but they had a ton of soccer fields. You know, so people were trying to kick goals in. We were on the Carling, something huge. And then all of a sudden, all these motorcycle cops show up. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I could have figured this. You know, you've got a couple hundred Villa fans. We're all getting pissed drunk. Someone probably said something about someone's mom. You know, I'm sure something bad happened. And they're like, no. They're gonna lead us into the station, into the Britannia. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And like, no, this is how it works in England. You get police escorts if you're the way support, it so that there's no problems. And I'm like, you know, I'm an American sports journalist. When you look at police escorts, you know, it's the team, you know, it's those guys, it's the general fans. We don't do anything like this. So I'm on the coach. I'm watching us led into the Britannia by police cops or police and. It's just surreal. And then you go into the back part, you go in where all the coaches are, there's chain link fencing that goes up like 20 feet. You feel like you're going into like solitary confinement or something. And then you walk in and you find out, okay, well, you can't drink in the stands, but you can drink in the concourses. So they've got everything from whatever beer you want to wine to coolers to like, they even had like Capri Sun and stuff. It was just ridiculously weird. So I'm going in, and so we're having pints, we're having a great time, we're having a sing-along, all that stuff. Things couldn't be better. So we go into the stand, game starts. I think Gabby scores early on the far side, so we're going nuts. It's like, you know, my first goal, it's only 10 minutes in. I'm thinking, well, it's not going to get any better than that. That's cool. So then I think I want to say Charlie Adam came in and scored. He came in off the bench and scored for Stoke, so it was even. And then Lowton comes in with his golazo, and it's like, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I was sitting next to, or standing next to, someone who was like 70 years old, a woman, like someone's mom. And we were all trying to protect her while everyone else was going down the aisles. I mean, it was absolutely crazy. And so, I just had never experienced anything quite like this. It was mental, totally mental. And then Benteke scores to finish it off. And it's like, yeah, I don't know if that's ever going to get topped. You know, it's just like, I don't know if it gets any better than that, frankly. And to be honest with you, I've been to a ton of away days since. And I've been to, I've been to fancy dress days in London, at Tottenham and Arsenal and places like that. And, I don't think anything quite compares. I've been to Wembley, and I'm still not sure it compares.
Wow, Chris, some great times there, it sounds like. I recall that I was there for that Stoke game myself. It's one of the few away games I've managed to get myself down to, even though I'm quite local. But all I recall from that match was at half-time, they sold out of beer. So I had to have a whiskey because my nerves were all over the place. So it always are watching Villa. But, I was pretty drunk as well that day. So talk to me about watching Villa in Seattle. What's it like? Who do you watch it with now as a big group of you? Do you all get together in the same pub still? Do you have a certain spot where you sit out? Just give a talk us through what the general match day is like.
So to finish up the story on you know, kind of creating the supporters group, once I got done with that, then I ended up going to Villa Park and seeing the following game when they played Fulham. So I also have the dubious distinction of seeing the first ever Villa goal at Villa Park for me was Charles Nzogbia. So that's an interesting bit of trivia, and a Fabian Delph own goal, which I thought was also a bit interesting. So we played Fulham that day, and I also got a chance to meet Peter Wyth. So I thought, you know, the Rotterdam connection and all that, it was very cool because I got a chance to meet him on the first time I ever went to Villa Park, which was phenomenal. So as you guys can tell, the whole trip went off just so fabulously for me that as soon as I got back to Seattle, I immediately said, yeah, we're putting something together like now. So that following game, I don't remember whatever day it was. It could have even been a midweek game, was the game when Manchester United beat us 3-0 to win the league. I think it may have even been the one where they had the Van Persie volley over Guzan that they kept showing for years. I don't remember if that was the particular game, but I know it was against United, and I know they beat us to win the league. Yeah. And that was the day we started our club back in 2013. And it was me and it was a couple of expats, Danny and Dave. And Danny actually lives back in Erdington now, off the Chester Road stop. And Dave still lives in town, but it's been mostly expats. I mean, we do get the occasional guys that are coming in that are Americans like me. We have a few kind of diehards. But my vice chair right now is a guy named Mark, who is an expat, born and bred in the Birmingham area. And we meet at a bar called Fido downtown, Irish bar. It's a pretty big one. I mean, they've got Fido's all over the country, in Chicago, DC, and wherever. But they have not opened ours back up since coronavirus. So we've been lucky in the sense that one of our other supporters, Josh, is really well known down in that part of town, downtown. We're kind of in the area, Pioneer Square, kind of next to where the stadiums are, where the Seahawks play and the Mariners play. So he's really well known there. So we've gotten in on a couple of bars that he knows really well. The first one's called Quality Athletics, and now we're at one called Merchants, which is one of the oldest bars in Pioneer Square, which would make it arguably the oldest bar in Seattle. And so they've been really accommodating, but we're trying to get back to Fido at the beginning of the year because that's apparently when they're going to start up. But we, you know, we'll have anywhere from, you know, shoot, we'll even have two or three guys at a game, but then we could also have upwards of a dozen, especially you also have to remember with the time difference, any crunch games that are played, you know, they're 4 o'clock games for us in the morning. So we've had a couple where they've been derby games, like back in the championship era, where we would actually be able to get to the bar because they thought so highly of us, and we're actually respectable guys compared to a lot of the other supporters groups in the area. I won't name names, Manchester United. You know, we've been very fortunate. In fact, our main bartender at Fido, we got her into being a Villa fan. She's actually Barcelona first, but she follows the Villa now pretty religiously. And so, it's just, you know, baby steps. We're figuring out small baby steps. But I think with the way we've started the season now, I expect that we're going to get more and more. But you know, we've had as many as 40 or 50 people, like when the championship playoff final with Fulham the first time, because that was on a weekend, we were able to really pack it at Fido. We had a ton of people there. And then the one where we actually won, we got probably 20 to 30, but because that was on a Monday, it was really tough for people to get in. So, we're building it slowly but surely. Again, it is a soccer mad town in Seattle, but you know, there's a lot of allegiances that are already pretty well forged, and it's a lot of top six. I mean, Liverpool is huge in this town. Arsenal is huge in this town. Chelsea is huge in this town. Unfortunately, City is really ramped up because of what they've been able to do. But we're coming. were coming. And I think, you know, I think the chances are pretty good. I mean, again, I've got good guys with me. Mark is a guy, he's in sales and he really wants to ramp things up. We're hoping to get one of the meetups here pretty soon. It was supposed to be in Toronto for the North American meetup this last fall, or right around now, actually, or a little earlier. I suspect it'll still happen whenever it can in Toronto. And then after that, we're really hoping we can get the next one and really show everyone what Seattle's all about when it comes to hosting a good time and watching some soccer.
I mean, amazing. And it sounds so parallel to, you know, I'm in New York, and it sounds so parallel to the kind of experience here with, you know, going down to Legends is the big bar down here. You know, a lot of expats, but, you know, there is the odd yourself, myself kind of person. It even sounds like our timelines are pretty similar in terms of when we started to follow the Villa. But I guess the big sort of question too, you know, you mentioned you can pack it out pretty well. What does that sort of typical match day atmosphere look like, you know, especially as you compare yourselves to some, because, you know, I think there's something to be said about following a team outside of the current traditional Big Six, in terms of how that support looks. You know, I've been to matches where United or City are sort of smashing someone and, you know, it's like a library. But then, you know, on the inverse of that, I've been to games where, you know, we're tight with a random, like we're playing Barnet in the championship and it's rowdy and, you know, stuff like that. So I'm wondering what it actually sounds like, looks like for you folks. And especially as, you know, I think in America, it's been such a big push to get the Premier League to grow in terms of interest. Has that been sort of a boon for your domestic Villa fans, or, you know, are you just seeing sort of more of that top six bias emerge?
Well, I'd say, you know, going back to even when we would have the meetups, North American meetups, whether they were in Chicago or San Diego and Austin, and, you know, and even the Austin one they did for the EPL mornings thing, where I went down for that, and that was a great time. It seems like when we all get together from all around the country, we love to sing and we love to be loud about it. And we're loud and proud for the Villa. I have not necessarily experienced that in our own situation. We're not a bunch of singers in Seattle, like in our own little space. But I will say that at Fado, they have a really cool setup where they've got different TVs going in different spaces right next to each other. So if you want to have a little banter back and forth, it's possible. I mean, it definitely can happen. Now, the Georgian Dragon, which I referenced earlier, that's really my local. I mean, like I said, that's like a 10-minute drive for me. Because they've got two or three TVs going on at once, but it's all within the confines of one big room. The banter there is absolutely, I mean, it's the crack is incredible. I mean, it's like nothing you've ever seen before. I mean, all you have to do is literally go 5 or 10 feet and you can just start having it with someone. Ironically, it's the only other time I've actually met a Birmingham City fan in my town. And I had the most remarkable conversation with that guy. And because he thought I wasn't, you know, because I was an American and he was an expat, he thought he could just basically talk to me like I didn't know anything. And once he realized that I actually kind of knew something, the tone of the conversation changed like 180 degrees. We ended up having a really good talk. But that's the banter at my local could get really spicy. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like my bar is even going to open up anymore. I'm going to have to find a different bar. But and it's kind of an unfortunate thing of what's going on these days. But I would say, generally speaking, you know, Seattle's very provincial by nature, just the culture itself. Because we are in the upper left-hand corner and we kind of don't mind being left alone a little bit. So when it comes to supporting the teams, you know, we're there. We can be somewhat vocal at times. But I will say, I think the only supporters group that I've really seen that really kind of sings on a regular basis, but they kind of sing the same song over and over, is Chelsea. That's about it. And I love those guys. I have a ton of Chelsea fans that are really good friends of mine. I don't begrudge them one bit.
Yeah. Our sponsor's a Chelsea fan. Shout out Hammerhead DFS, by the way, if you play fantasy sports. But go ahead, James. I think you had something there.
Yeah, no, just briefly, I was wondering what the best experience you've had in the bar is, just watching Villa from afar. What is it, the playoff final, or is there something else, a matchup that sticks out in your head, thinking that was a great time, we all had a brilliant time there?
Yeah, I have to say, James, I have to say that playoff final with Derby was off the charts. I mean, the Guinness was flowing very early that day. And so, like I said, our bartender, April, who we turned into a Villa fan, she was rocking the colors, which they don't usually allow, you know, but in special circumstances, like, you know, the richest game in the world, you know, they allowed that to happen. And so, you know, once we knew we were in, the tab got pretty extreme. And then it moved to my local. And so my friend Josh and I ended up there. And then April came in later after she cleaned up for us. And we kept it going. And it was fun. It was just a great day. And just the whole idea of knowing that we were back where we belonged and where we needed to be was pretty overwhelming at the time. And to see the way that they did it, and to feel like they did it in such a way that there was no doubt where we should be. There was absolutely no doubt. I think the West Ham game this last spring or summer was certainly very emotional as well. You know, watching all three results at the same time in real time, that's always kind of a mental experience, because it's not the same level at all. I understand that, because we're talking about a totally different end of the table. But it certainly reminded me of that year when City won the title after United had just finished playing at Sunderland, thinking they had won. And then all of a sudden, within what, 10, 15 seconds, City wins the title. It's like, I mean, the swing, the emotional swings on a day like that can be often hard to take, especially when you're on the wrong end of them. Thankfully, we were never really on the wrong end on that day. It was a little dicey once that looped header went, or that looped goal went in from Yarmolenko. But I mean, how does that happen literally like a minute after we score? And looks like Grealish is going to save the day. It's so poetic. And what a fitting ending that, you know, the talisman does it. And then that happens. It's like, well, wait a second. That's either people are thinking that's so Villa, or they're thinking, oh, something's going to happen. It's just what's next. So those two are the things that immediately pop up in terms of, you know, being with my guys, being with the supporters, and just having to gut through some days that obviously turned out really, really fantastic for us.
That's excellent. So I think one more before we move on to just chatting about the Leicester game, just because you have kind of gone through it, you've gone the gamut of emotions, like starting to follow, like, you know, from afar, starting a supporters club, like, what would your advice be out there to the folks who, you know, are supporting the Villa, maybe a little bit more on their own and more isolated places? It's definitely a few of the folks we've profiled and a few of the folks who listen in. So,
yeah, I think my only advice would be is to reach out, and especially reach out to the people in England. I have encountered nothing but unbelievable people in my time there. You know, I guess generally when I travel, I live by one rule of thumb, and that's just don't be a dick. I mean, just be a nice guy. Don't, you know, as long as you're a nice guy, no one's going to care where you come from. And if you're willing to listen to what people have to say and you don't act like you know it already, you can learn everything. You can learn absolutely everything about what you need to do. I mean, I've gone to championship playoff finals where I did both legs against Middlesbrough a couple years ago. I did both legs against West Brom last year. I've got Tammy's PK on tape from the stands where we all just absolutely lost our heads. It was and then we missed the last train, so we had to do a taxi all the way to Kidderminster. I mean, these are experiences that you'll never forget. And it's just you know, those types of things are crazy. And if you can afford to go. I guess maybe that might be my one thing. I know travel is really tough for us right now and those types of things, but when it opens back up and you feel comfortable going, don't hesitate, because there will be people in that town that will be willing to do whatever you need to learn about the club. Because that's one thing I've always learned, is that Villa may be a massive club, it may have all the history and everything else behind it, but it's always had its feet on the floor. And, you know, you see that with Dean Smith, you see that with Jack Grealish, you see that with, you know, even guys like Gabby and, you know, even guys in the media like Stan Collymore and some of these other guys, you know, they fly the Villa flag because they know it's the real deal. There's no fluff. There's no artifice. It's not glory hunting. It's the real, it's legit. It's the real McCoy. It's the reason I signed on. And so, like I said, if you need help trying to figure out where to go or what to do, there's always going to be people that will connect you to other people. And if they don't know the answer, I guarantee you, they know someone who knows it and they will always help you out. And that's been my experience. And I don't see why that wouldn't be any different if someone else was trying to do it, but take the time and go there and learn it because it's worth learning.
I mean, perfectly well put. I mean, you can tell you're a sports reporter. It was so eloquent. So let's move on to a little bit. You know, we've talked about the Villa from 5,000 feet. Let's talk about, you know, the boots on the ground, just boots on the pitch. Monday, 1-0 against Leicester City. The folks who I think a lot of folks are saying we're trying to emulate right now with some good success so far in the season. James, I'll come to you. Just general thoughts after the first whistle. What were you feeling? What were your thoughts during the game? Just give me your kind of gut reaction after that one.
Yeah, well, firstly, record breakers yet again. You know, after our 10 wins in a row 2 years ago, now we're ending 90 years of a record to win our first four games of the season. It's absolutely unbelievable in the top division as well. Leicester was always going to be a difficult match. They're a completely different kettle of fish to Liverpool. They defend much, much deeper. Honestly, once I saw Vardy wasn't in the team, I thought, okay, we might have a little chance here. They were a different proposition, really. You could see with Iheanacho up top, he's the sort of player who likes to come deep, get in front of the defenders, as opposed to getting behind like Vardy does. So it was just a game of patience, really. A bit of a chess game, if you like. We took our time. We grew into the game as it went along. You could see we made some changes as well as the game went along. I think initially, Barkley was playing closest to the role he played against Liverpool. Wasn't really working out for him. You know, wasn't really getting into the game as much. So it looked like McGinn took that role on. And McGinn's back. There's no two ways about that. He is back. You know, I think I said before I had real fears that we were going to lose that McGinn. But he is back. I'm so pleased about it. But then we've got quality throughout the team now. That's the difference this season. You go from the back five, all of them excellent, including Matty Target in that, who's you know, had his critics. But I thought he did a great job of pushing back their right back, Castagna. Pushed him back, kept him relatively quiet, linked up really well with Jack. Jack was sublime, but we're so used to it. The only person who doesn't see it is we know who, Mr. Southgate, but we see it week in, week out. He was absolutely sublime. Okay, he perhaps could have released the ball on a couple of occasions a bit quicker, but, you know, he was still a great outlet for us. So talking back to Barkley, it took our time to get the goal, but it's a perfect time to score. Nearly last kick of the game, it's the best time to score a goal. A bit like the Matty Loughton one we mentioned earlier. It's that euphoric feeling of knowing they're probably not going to get back into this game. So he's obviously taken the ball from deep, again from Mr. McGinn, who was excellent. Run to the space. They made a substitution. I'm trying to remember who they took off now. But they took their defensive midfielder off. And I think Chowdhury lost Barkley. And Barkley's just, you know, we all know, hit it. He's got that ability from the edge of the area, both feet, hit it. Great, great finish into the corner. Keeper wasn't saving it. But, you know, we had to really be patient because it's not the same game as Liverpool. We didn't have the space and behind to utilise. You know, Watkins had a quiet game by his standards, but he'll get games where he's much busier, where, you know, we get a chance to get him behind. This one was a game of patience. You know, we might have got one from a set piece earlier, but other than that, we didn't have to do a great deal going forward. But lots and lots of positives throughout the team, as we've seen across the season so far. They all look really positive. you know, and it just shows the difference in confidence. A team that winning, a Villa team that's winning, is just great to watch.
Now, I was going to say that the two things that I heard post-game, I always try to get match of the day when I can, when it's on. And I thought I saw Michael Richards talk about how important it was that Villa showed they had another gear. You know, everyone thought after 7-2 that was what everyone was going to see. Like, that was the only Villa that it was either going to be that kind of game or they were going to be total flops. And I think they showed that they had the ability to grind out a result, get a clean sheet, really frustrate Leicester at the top end. Because the bottom line is not everyone's going to play that high line trapping thing that Liverpool has made their money on. They're just not going to do it. They're going to track back. They're going to put bodies behind the ball. They're going to make it tougher for you to actually penetrate and get quality looks. So I thought that was important. And then I think Tim Howard on the post game on the NBC here in the States talked about how important it was that, you know, this was a game last year that Villa would have probably found a way to lose at the end or would have struggled to draw. Whereas with us, I always felt like, I don't know if we were necessarily on the front foot a lot of the time, but I was a little surprised to see that it was true 50-50 possession. I really thought that Leicester might have had a little bit more of the ball, but when I looked at the stats, it was really 50-50. And then on top of that, we were really good in transition. I mean, we really countered them well. And I think even with Jack not having the Jack kind of game that we would have, you know, that we've come to expect, he still had a couple moments of magic. But yet we were able to unlock him at the end with Barkley and finding that space, which I found a bit ironic because he'd basically been giving up shots and deferring most of the game. And then all of a sudden it was like, you come with this reputation. We've seen it at Everton. We've seen it at Chelsea as a guy that will bomb it from outside the box. He'll take his chances, right, left-footed. You know, some will be ridiculous. Some will end up in row Z, but it's like, that's what you do. It's like, why are you passing? Why are you allergic to shooting all the time? And then all of a sudden he takes the shot and we win the game. So I thought that was phenomenal. I thought the way they saw the game out was phenomenal. I thought Bertrand Traore coming in and settling things on that side and spelling Trez, who just showed a remarkable engine that whole game. I mean, we can talk about his quality and his ability to finish and I don't know if you guys noticed this, but Leicester was certainly marking him on the set plays. I don't know if you guys saw that, but they were really accounting for him. But he showed a phenomenal engine and a well-deserved rest. But when Traore came in, he really settled things down, showed his quality. And it was amazing how comfortable that last 5 minutes looked or 4 minutes looked, considering we score something like that, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're on the back foot. We got to play behind the ball. We got to bunker in. You know, I'm waiting for Smith to bring in Marvelous or somebody to really shore up the middle or do something. But it showed you that these guys are really confident right now, and that confidence is shining through.
Absolutely. And I just want to sort of go back to Traore a little bit. One of the things that I thought really actually opened things up for Barkley was the fact that Traore coming on was really willing to get at Chaudhry and the other folks down that side. Like, you know, they didn't really have necessarily an answer for him, and especially with fresh legs coming on late in the game, I think he's just like a different proposition than Trez is, a little bit more dynamic on the ball. You know, he's finding way, and it's such a fluid front three right now, you know, finding his way down the center, down the wing. I think that's so much of what Smith was trying to do, bringing in players with versatility like he did, like Watkins.
Interesting too, seriously, Eddie. I think that, you know, you mentioned a situation like Chaudhry. I think it's a great example of how the team is really working for everyone right now.
Yeah.
You know, Chaudhry didn't track back and didn't track Barkley and paid the price. I mean, yeah, that was his guy in the middle. He was supposed to be marking him. I just noticed this on the second watch, how much, and maybe this was all part of Dean Smith's master plan when he signed Ollie Watkins, but we know that Watkins has been basically a one season wonder at Brentford as a nine. Before that, he was a winger. Before that, he was an outside player. He was an outlet. And what I'm wondering is that because Jack is so mercurial in his positioning, he can go left to right. He can take the ball on one side and move it to the other. And while the rest of the world is complaining that he doesn't pass the ball enough, we understand that we have other players now, like an Ollie Watkins, that will slot in where he left off, or will even track back more, which will allow Jack to stay up there and cause the kind of havoc that he can create, because they don't have a position for him. It takes two or three players to mark Jack Grealish. It really does. And so I think when you look at a guy like Chowdhury, and he's kind of marking space or losing track of a guy like Barkley, I think it really shows. Whereas on the other end, in our defense, you look at Luiz, you look at the tactical change that Smith made. I think he said, 15, 20 minutes in, where he brought Barkley back in a little bit more to work with Douglas Luiz to kind of shore things up and to give those guys an out ball when they needed it, when Leicester was trying to pile on some pressure. I think that just shows that Smith's got a really – he's very confident in the formation they've got right now. He's confident in the options that they can create for each other. He feels like if he tries to make a tactical thing on the fly, he can do that, and it won't completely, gum up the game plan going in. The game plan going in was not necessarily to play Barkley that low. But now you're seeing Barkley can come in and he can get the ball just like Douglas Luiz can, which again allows Grealish to play high and forces defenses to try to figure out, okay, when they switch the play from one side to the other and Grealish is getting these balls one-on-one, we're in deep trouble. We got to account for that. And then you've got target overlapping. You've got options there. And I think it's really starting to show. And I give Smith a lot of credit for identifying that issue so early and then making it work to our advantage eventually.
Yeah, I suppose it's horses for courses, isn't it, sometimes? I mean, like you said earlier, really, it's Liverpool, completely different proposition. They were happy for us to go in behind them because they thought, well, no one does this to us. Leicester, however, I expected a bit more from them, though, I must say. As the home team, I thought they might have, taken the game to us a little bit more. I was surprised to see Slimani even get on as well. I mean, Iheanacho was pretty much ineffective. He's normally one of our bogey players, really. He tends to always score against us. I think when we were doing a preview for this match, we heard that Vardy might be out, and we were all fearing about Iheanacho perhaps, working his hoodoo again against us. But thankfully, that didn't happen. But I was really surprised because, normally they're a really good side at home. But perhaps the fact there's no crowd in there for them, that's perhaps making a big difference. I know it's quite an atmosphere at the their stadium normally, so maybe that's affecting them more than most. So maybe to counter that, for us, maybe we're playing with that bit more confidence because there's not the away crowd to deal with, and it's a bit of a leveler, if you like. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind, and I honestly think that not playing in front of fans is the reason why we stayed up. Yeah. I firmly believe that. I think it allowed us to play freer. Because I've been in the whole 10 many times, upper and lower, where it can get really tense. You can just feel it. You can just feel it. And it's not necessarily a negative thing, but I think sometimes it can translate into negative energy out on the field sometimes. And I also would say, with Vardy, for instance, he showed last year he can occupy both Mings and Konsa. I mean, he is a guy that they can go over the top with him, and he will cause problems at every turn. I just never, even though I know Iheanacho's got a great scoring record against us, I just never felt that with the confidence level that those two are playing at right now and their partnership, I just never felt like he was going to bother us at all. I just felt like he was going to probably try to do his thing. Maybe they could get a set piece or something like that, but honestly, I didn't think in the run of play he was going to do much. Way more concerned with a guy like Harvey Barnes, who I think, really tried to get at Matty Cash. And I thought that was the matchup of the day. I mean, I know a lot of people were talking about Grealish versus Castagna, and that was a great matchup. I mean, it basically turned into a foul fest. But with Cash and Barnes, I thought that was a great matchup. Really pitted two of the young guns in the league now. And I think Matty Cash is going to end up being the steal of the season. I mean, I personally feel like Emmy Martinez was the best signing of the transfer window for me personally. I just think it starts at the back. I remember how many people talked about Tom Heaton when he was, how many points he was going to save us last year because of his experience and nous and just his overall ability. Well, Emmy Martinez, I think you can even add to that. Even when Heaton comes back, I just don't think Heaton's going to find, I don't think he's going to get back in.
He's a footballer as well, Chris, isn't he? I think that's the difference. I mean, that's what you want from a goalkeeper now. You want someone who's comfortable with the ball at his feet, and he seems to have that in his locker as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Very athletic. He's prone to, you know, he had the mistake against Liverpool, almost got punished for it. But I think he clearly is a guy that if he does make a mistake, do you feel like he's going to do it again? No, I mean, not me. To me, it feels like he's really learning quickly how it's going to go here in the Prem. Because, you know, he's been with Arsenal forever, but he's been loaned out to umpteen many teams. He never really found a foothold anywhere. But now he can really settle in and work on his confidence and really start to become the guy I think he knew he was capable of being. And that's why, to me, it was an absolute masterstroke to get him from Arsenal. Because at one time, we made ourselves incredibly better, and we made Arsenal horrible, in my opinion. I mean, I think Arsenal was really going to rue the day that they let go of Emi Martinez, and I think they already are in some respects. I mean, having to go out and pay a ton of money to go out and get guys, they didn't have to do that. They didn't have to do that. And I'm just shocked at what they did, even though, don't get me wrong, I will stand for Ollie Watkins. I'll stand for Bertrand Traore. And I can't wait to see Wesley come back. That's going to be like an extra signing for us. And I think that's the reason we probably didn't go harder for a striker at the end of the window, like a Josh King or someone like that. I just don't think they feel that they're going to need to, because I think they feel good about where Wesley is in terms of how close he's getting. But for me, Emi Martinez is where it starts. I think he's the key.
Absolutely. Just so we can get moving on a little bit, I just want to really quickly get your man of the match. I'll start with Chris, and we can move on to James.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I could have picked 11. I mean, they were all excellent. You know, even Grealish on a day where he's probably, by his standards, probably a 6 or 6.5, 7 maybe. You know, I mean, he's still such a difference maker. It's ridiculous. I probably would give it to Barkley because of the moment of magic. That's what you need. You need to be able to unlock games like that and to be the difference maker. But just for the full 90 minutes, and I think how he was able to really battle with a guy like Harvey Barnes, I'd give it to Matty Cash. I think he was exceptional in that role going into a you know, again, no fans, I think makes a huge difference for a young guy like that coming in. Yeah, I give it to Matty Cash.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with Matty Cash either myself. I think there's several players who, like you say, who got the award. Plenty of you worked the socks off full 90 minutes or, you know, for however long on the pitch. And include Trezeguet, I thought Target had one of his better games as well. You know, Cons has really grown into being a top-class centre-half Premier League now. Really pleased with that.
If he chipped in with that goal, mm-hmm. I think Cons would have absolutely been the man of the match for me, because he's been doing it on both ends. But yeah. I absolutely agree. I think Cons has been, would he say, I don't know if you can say he's been the best guy so far this year, but he could certainly make a debate. He could make a debate.
He's up there for sure. Absolutely. Go ahead, James. Yeah.
No, Eddie, I was going to go to you. Who's your man of the match?
Oof. I'm going to go with a little bit of a, you know, not unpopular opinion, but I think just someone who's been getting a little bit of flack in the last few weeks. I think Matt Target had an exceptional game. I think he acquitted himself really well against not only Perez, but Castagna bombing down. You know, I think Castagna was a little bit more preoccupied with Grealish, and maybe that helps, you know, take a little bit of that overlap that Leicester brings to the table off his plate. But, you know, I think he had a really just like astute game, made some really intelligent runs forward, you know, got around Grealish, provided backup. You know, he did his job on both ends of the pitch. So definitely just a stellar performance there. And I think he would get it for me.
I was going to say, I saw a Twitter question before the game. Someone was asking generally who in that Villa lineup tends to get really underrated. And he was my pick. When people come down to it, they're looking at that starting 11 now, and they're trying to find weak spots. we don't have to worry about strengths anymore because we're really strong all over the pitch, everywhere. But if anybody has to pick a weak spot, you know, because everyone wants to say you're only as strong as your weakest link, right? People will point to a guy like Matt Target and say, well, they can do better there. I think he's vastly underrated. I think, to be honest with you, if it wasn't for a guy like Chilwell or I don't know who else you'd pick, Cresswell or whatever, I think he should be in the discussion for England. I mean, I don't see any reason why he couldn't be in that discussion. I think he's very solid.
Yeah, I see him as kind of, you know, thinking back to his Southampton days, like almost like that Ryan Bertrand next in line kind of, you know, he's going to be reliable, maybe like pick up a few caps by the time all is said and done, but never going to be that guy, especially with Saka kind of, you know, coming in and Chilwell. Like, it's a tough position to break into, which is why I've kind of been banging on the drum for Matty Cash for Poland.
Feels to me like that Southgate is just trying to pigeonhole guys. Saka, he's not a natural. I mean, I remember when he was using Delph at left back. I mean, he's tried to, like, Maitland-Niles. He's trying to pigeonhole guys into these positions that they just don't typically play, where he's got guys. I mean, I'm not going to go out there and say that he needs to scrape the bottom of the barrel and go after guys. I mean, even like a Danny Rose or something like that, he doesn't have to do that. There's young left backs that are playing well right now, and I think Target's one of them. I think he should be in the frame. I mean, you look at Chilwell again, and if he's hurt, you know, I know Aaron Cresswell is a guy that gets some shouts. There's guys out there that they can use. I don't remember who it was. If it was is it the Burnley left back? Is it Charlie Taylor or Charlie Dan? I can't remember. Taylor? Yeah. You know, he's a guy that's impressed me over the years. I think Charlie Daniels, when he was at Bournemouth, I mean, he's a guy that I thought has played well too. There's guys out there that can be used. You don't have to play a back three just because you don't think you have a left back. And maybe your number one left back is hurt out of the picture for some reason. I don't know. It's just weird to me because you look at that back three that Southgate plays. The only guy who really ever plays it is Connor Cody. I don't understand it. I mean, ironically, it really suits Tyrone Ming because he's a guy that can cover that much ground. He could play that. And if Dean Smith wanted to go to a back three, I think it'd be perfect for a guy like Mings. But I think in what Southgate can do with all that talent and he has to go to a back three, are you kidding me? I just find that just incredible.
I mean, we've been banging on that drum all the time since the first selection, you know, right before the season started. Speaking of, you know, other folks coming to town, other, you know, new boys who are getting looks over the old boys, we got Leeds on Friday. And I think one of the things that's really gotten me about this Leeds United team, you know, I have no issues with Leeds United, like big club. It's good to have them back in the Premier League. I think the thing that gets me has been the media narrative. And I'm really excited to hopefully, you know, put a bin on that, especially with Calvin Phillips looking like he's injured, the linchpin of that team. So James, I'll start with you. What are you looking for out of this Leeds United team? Just kind of give me your general thoughts on them this season and, you know, how you think this game will go.
Yeah, so I think we had a little chat earlier, Eddie. Firstly, I want to get rid of the faux rivalry we have with Leeds. It doesn't exist. You know, no one cares about it. Villa and Leeds is not a rivalry. You know, we had the incident a couple of years back. It got resolved on the pitch. Let's park it. Forget it. We're both in the Premier League now. We can move on with our lives. Now, Leeds, like you say, they're a good traditional club. They're sort like Villa and Everton. You want to see them in the Premier League. You know, you want to see them doing well. You know, proper club. It's a great, old stadium as well. As to how they've started, pretty well as a promoted team. You know, they're doing what they do. They're going to be probably the fittest team in the league, and I imagine they'll probably give us our toughest test so far. I appreciate we played Liverpool already, but you know, with all due respect, they didn't give us a test that we were expecting. So I'm expecting a real test from Leeds. You know, I think it'll be relentless in terms of them closing us down. You know, we won't get a moment's peace. It is a big plus for us that Calvin Phillips will be out. That's certainly a plus. They seem to be in a team like quite a few, a bit like Leicester. They've got loads of attacking midfielders. Perhaps not really the quality up top. You know, I look at Bamford and think he's not what I would class as a Premier League striker. Watch him go score a hat-trick now, probably. But, you know, for me, I wouldn't want him leading the line at Villa. You know, I wouldn't have him amongst our squad. I don't think he's good enough. He didn't really do it in the Championship last season either. But it's going to be a real test for us. Hopefully, they'll give us a bit of space in behind so Watkins can get in the game this time. But I feel like it's going to be the sort of game where even if we get in front, we'll never be too far in front. So they'll always be in the game. You know, if we can continue this amazing run, we're on, brilliant. But if we don't, you know, if we don't continue this run, you know, let's not forget it's been an absolutely amazing start to the season. Who would not have taken 12? If let's say the worst happens, we lose. Who wouldn't have taken 12 points after five games? It'd be a madman not to. So, but anyway, they've started quite well. And I expect a tough test. However, I think it's a team we can win still.
Yeah, I've got all the time in the world for Leeds. I mean, I understand the rivalry is, if you want to call it a rivalry, is gets heated up every once in a while, and especially because of what happened when we were in the championship. I will say this, though, especially with what James said about Bamford. I don't have like a Diego Costa, Luis Suarez type of hate for Patrick Bamford, but it's close. After the crap that he tried to pull against us and what he did with El Ghazi is just, it was stunning to me at the time. Absolutely stunning that a guy would do that. And I'm glad he paid a price for it eventually. But I hope that reputation is hung around his neck like an albatross for years, because that kind of play is the reason why people go off the game. They look at that and they go, oh, it's just cheating. It's just people diving. It's just people faking. It's pantomime. It's ridiculous. And I don't blame them. But Leeds, the club and the history and everything that they've done, I mean, I've got a couple friends, good friends in Seattle that are Leeds supporters, that are old school, proper Leeds supporters, and I've got all the time in the world for them.
Yeah,
I'm a little – their transfer window business is a little curious to me. Rodrigo, not seeing it. Maybe he's just having a tougher time betting in than they expected, you know, being a guy from another league, I suppose. But, you know, he was supposed to come in and start firing right away. Don't see it. I do think that the other player that they had, excuse me, the guy who came in, was it Poveda? He looked like he could be a player.
Rafinha.
Yeah. Is that Rafinha? Yeah. The Brazilian.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He looks like he could be a good guy, a good player in time. So in that sense, I think this is a good time to play them. And obviously, the Calvin Phillips news is news. That's news to me. I didn't know he was going to be out.
Yeah, 6 weeks.
So them not having the Yorkshire Pirlo,
don't even.
that's a bad sign for them, because I don't know who would necessarily fill that role. We'll get to see Bielsa, the tactician, go to work and work his tactical magic against Dean Smith to see what he can do. But ultimately, I agree 100% with James. If Bamford up front doesn't bother me in the slightest. I like their goalie. I think their goalie is actually really good. Luke Ayling's okay. Cook might be their best signing, I think. I think he's done a decent job. Stuart Dallas, I've always rated, liked him. Helder Costa, yeah, lukewarm on him. Click. Definitely don't like him, but I know he was just doing what he did. Bamford is the one that's the real villain as far as that goes. Jack Harrison, really liked him. But the rest of their team, I don't see what the fuss is all about. And I see them getting caught out eventually. They want to do what Liverpool did. If we need to go 7-2 on them, we can go 7-2 on them. We've shown that we've got that tool in our kit. So let him try to play a high line. Let him try to play aggressive. See what happens.
No, I 100% agree. I think they're going to get found out sooner rather than later. And one of the things that really gets me about this Calvin Phillips business is, like, he is the linchpin of that team. Like, they can play the way they can because he breaks up play so well. Like, he can spray long balls. Like, they're relentless, but, like, without him kind of in the engine room, I wonder how it's going to all come together. Like, he's their set piece taker. He does everything for that team.
I watched the Wolves game a little bit. And it felt like when Pablo Hernandez came on, he was kind of the glue. I mean, he could kind of turn things over, make things happen for them a little bit. I'm really kind of surprised that Pablo Hernandez is not playing a lot more, because it just seems like he has something that works well with Bielsa, but he doesn't want to use him.
I think he was just back from injury, actually, Chris. I think that was his first match back. So I expect he'll come in for Phillips. He's a good player. It's just age that's against him, isn't it?
He doesn't necessarily break up play in the way Phillips can, too. Phillips is just really good at reading the game from a defensive standpoint. But at this point, I know it's tough to stick your neck out, but I'd like to get a score prediction, maybe if you also want to be so bold as to put scorers in there. But, I mean, before I do that, I just want to make a quick shout-out to Patrick Bamford. I just think he looks like a spoiled rich kid, like that kid who went to private school down the street who you just never really liked. That's who I look at him as, and I got no time for a kid like that. That's the blue collar.
I got no time for a guy who cheats the game. That's my beef with him. Yeah, for me, I think he's just a cheat. I just that will, I'll never get over that, because I think that was just such a, just the most ridiculous thing I'd seen in years.
Oh, it was brutal. Just that was ridiculous. Did not like that. But I mean, Chris, I mean, with that in mind, what are you thinking for the game?
Well, again, it's kind of funny because, you know, people thought that both Villa and Leicester were going to go for it. It was probably going to be a 4-3 thriller, goals galore, because, you know, they have, we both have attacking threats, and who knows, and you know, no one can keep a clean sheet in the Premier League according to every media member in the world. It's kind of funny because I guarantee you that's going to be the storyline on the Thursday, you know, media stuff. The Friday podcasts are going to be like, yeah, there's no way there's no way this could be a 1-0. There's no way this could be a 1-1. I think it could be a 1-0. In fact, I think that's what it's going to be, 1-0 to the Villa.
Who's going
to
score?
It's tough because, you know, the one thing that you don't get when you take Connor Hurahan out of the lineup is the quality service on the set pieces and those types of things. So it's hard to see them getting something maybe off a set piece. But out of the run of play, you know what? Okay, I'm going to go for it because James kind of inspired me a little bit with his talk about Johnny McGinn being back. I'm gonna go Super John McGinn with a worldie. I think it's going to be that. I said it on Twitter. The two reasons I know John McGinn is back is because he's getting yellow cards, so he's out there frustrating the crap out of everybody, and he's being a nuisance to everybody, and then he's also getting the deflections, which means he's going out there and he's taking his shot. Hadn't really seen that in a little while. And I'm not talking about the Liverpool one specifically, but he's out there and he's trying to make something happen. And that's how I can kind of tell. I think his confidence is back. And that's how I can tell. That, and then him using that patented butt move to be able to shield the world away from the ball. That's how I know he's back. But I'll go Super John McGinn, 1-0 to the Villa.
James, what are we thinking?
That'll do me just fine as well. I'm going to go 2-1. I'm expecting Watkins to get in the game this time. So I think he might get a chance to get in behind and put one away. So Watkins to score. And let's have a dream scenario, shall we? Let's say a Bamford own goal. What goes around comes around. Yeah, let's have that, please. That'll do me just fine.
If I'd been thinking about it, that would have been the poetry for me. That would have been the cherry on top. I don't know why that didn't occur to me, but James is on it.
We've had everything else this season. Let's have that as well now. Come on, let's be greedy.
Yes.
Oh man, maybe I'm riding the high off of the last few wins, but I feel like especially without Phillips in there anchoring that midfield, they're going to struggle. And you know what I've seen from that Leeds team, who is very well drilled, who is in very good shape, they do tend to fade out of games. Having someone like Hernandez come on for the last little bit, you know, with his quality and, you know, his legs fresh at the end of the game is a boon for them. If he needs to start, I do see that being a very thin bend. So I'm going to go 2-0. I think, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to link play very well. I think they're going to get at us, but we've shown that we can really counterattack and counterattack well. I think Watkins is going to get on the score sheet. And honestly, I thought he was pushing for it. I honestly think Traore is going to come on and get his opener. I think he's the kind of proposition for this game. I don't think he'll start, but I think I would like to see him get a run in the team. So
it's interesting, Eddie, because I think what you said is absolutely right in terms of them without Phillips in the middle. What I'm wondering is, will that maybe cause Bielsa to feel like he needs to bunker in a little bit more and just play on the counter?
Because he is the tactical
genius. He is the mastermind who can play the game about 40 different ways, apparently. So we're going to find out what he's capable of doing. I just wonder if, especially now away from home, it may have been if they were in front of a full Villa Park crowd, maybe that's different. But I'm wondering if they would bunker in a little bit more, which would make it a little tougher to try to break them down. Because I think that is still one thing that we haven't necessarily shown that we can do yet. And I think part of it is because we just have not necessarily figured out all of the partnerships and everything coming together in that way. I think we're really trying to serve it up for Ollie Watkins. We're really trying to bring the crosses in and trying to score some goals that way and maybe get some scraps, you know, when the ball comes back out to the top of the box. it seems like when we do try to ticky-tack it, like when Jack tried to do that at the end of the Leicester game, that we end up with about five guys in the box and they don't know what to do. Traore was right on top of Barkley, who was right on top of Jack, and it just didn't feel like there was any sense that they kind of have a great feeling yet of how they want to approach those types of movements. So again, I think that bolsters my 1-0. I think I feel even better after listening to you talk about it.
I don't know. I've always thought Bielsa, even since his time in Argentina, has been kind of known as a guy who plays one way. He's a tactician, but I think it's because he has this style of play that works in so many ways. But he's also, you know, I think he's, for all the good he's done and, you know, what a legendary guy he is, I think he actually, you know, he's never won a major trophy in Europe since coming over from Argentina. And I think that is the thing that kind of does loom large in his, I guess his only major trophy is actually the championship title, oddly enough. Yeah. But I think he will struggle to adjust his game plan because he is that kind of stubborn type. But we shall see. And hopefully, you know, regardless of what he does, we do it better. But I think that wraps it up for this week. Chris, thanks so much for coming on. This is always a time we like to give our guests a little bit of space for plugs. So if you have anything, you know, fire away.
No, just other than I encourage everyone when things open back up to come over to Seattle. We'll show all the Villa fans here. We always try to show them a great time. Come down to Fado. We'll buy you a pint of Guinness or 12. Come enjoy the games with us because there is so much to do. You know, Seattle is a great place to come if you do kind of enjoy the tourist scene a little bit. Got Pike Place Market, got the Space Needle. You know, if there's other teams playing like the Hawks or the Mariners or Sounders or what have you, you know, we got the Kraken coming up next year. So, you know, we'll be cracking some skulls on the hockey rink. there's a lot of stuff going on in Seattle. Just obviously encourage everyone in the States and beyond. If you make it our way, don't hesitate to give us a shout. What's the Twitter address for us? It's at AVS, as in Sam, AVSC, Seattle Lion. And so you can always catch up with us there. And we also have a Facebook page. So just search Aston Villa Seattle and you'll find us. And it's required to, you need to ask for approval, but we'll get you in there. And then once you do, you'll see all the activities and all the events that we've got set up. So just encourage everyone to come to the 206 and check it out, and we'll show you a great time.
Yeah, and for anyone listening who hasn't been to the Pacific Northwest, great beer scene, great sports scene. I've actually been to a Cascade Cup game. I saw it down in Portland, but you know, they care about their football there. So if you're looking to catch a game both in the bar and then at the stadium, it's a good place to be. But James, anything you'd like to plug?
No, sounds good to me. I'll be coming to Seattle, I think.
It's a good place to be. A lot of good hiking.
James, you are more than welcome to come. Thank you. You know you can catch up with us, and we will make sure that you don't have to buy a beer.
Oh, that sounds dreamland. Thank you.
We got a lot of those promises going right now. We're not going to have to pay for a beer and other travels the next 10 years. But, you know, other than that, you know, like, comment, subscribe. We hope you guys are listening and sharing. But other than that, Chris, thanks again for joining us today. It's been a blast, Chris. And hopefully you're the good luck charm that we need on Friday. But if no one has anything else, up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.